Hi and welcome to the Romance Program. I'm volunteer Jeannie Yost for Sun Sounds. I've got one story coming up this hour from True Love Magazine. It's called Behind the Scenes with a Rocker's Wife. Here's the story. I just want to make love to you, floated in the air, sent like a prediction on the sound waves of his voice. I closed the door behind me and walked over to a table near the exit. If this proved to be a mistake, I could make a quick departure. There he was, tall, well-built, dressed all in black, a guitar resting on his knee. His silverine hair shone brightly in the spotlight. I noticed he had dimples at the corners of his sensual mouth. Nice. Very nice, I thought. I was only in this club because Jeannie had begged me to check this guy out. He's so cool, she'd said, and his voice is like butter. He sort of looks like a cross between Tom Jones and Elvis Presley when they were young. She was right about that. This wasn't easy for me, alone at a bar, whatever you want to call it. Guys were everywhere, hanging out, drinking, checking out the babes. Most of the females were cloistered in small groups of three or four, waiting to be asked to dance, hoping to meet Prince Charming. Fat chance, I thought. I didn't like being single. I was ready to settle down again into a marriage that would hopefully last this time. The first one had been a definite disaster. Too young. Make that too dumb and young. I ordered a rum and coke from the waitress and tried to relax into my chair. I listened to the music and decided that this guy had a lot of potential. What in the world was he doing in a hotel lounge in St. Catharines? I sipped my drink, contemplating the possibilities. Musicians did not make the best husbands, or at least that's what I'd heard. However, there were always exceptions to every rule. So what the heck? I had nothing to lose and everything to gain. I motioned to the waitress to come over to my table. I want to buy the guitar player a drink when he goes on break, I told her with a smile, slipping a 10 into her hand. Would you ask him to join me at the table? I can do that, she responded, shoving the 10 into her pocket of her cocktail apron. She grinned at me and walked away. I sat back in my chair, feeling satisfied with myself. I could be bold when necessary. Things don't always land in your lap on their own, I'd found. Sometimes you just have to take the initiative. When my intended conquest concluded the last song of his first set, he stepped off the stage and was promptly accosted by two women with bleached blonde hair. Frizzed and fried was what I called it. My waitress came to the rescue, whispering in his ear and pointing in my direction. He smiled at me broadly, dimples flaring, and I sighed with relief. He liked what he saw. For this venture, I'd put on a tight black skirt, which fell several inches above my knees. Short, but not too short, just tempting enough without being vulgar. The high heels and black sheer stockings set off my legs further, while the clingy black lace bodysuit I'd worn really played up my ample chest. Red lipstick was my trademark, as were my red nails. My dark hair fell in a classic bob just above my shoulders, really bringing out my bright blue eyes. I looked good. He made his way across the floor to my table. He reached a long-fingered hand out to me, smiled, bowed slightly from the waist, and said, "Pleased to meet you. I'm Fry Larkin." When our hands met, I could feel the strength in his, the calluses on his fingertips. I looked up into his smiling gray-green eyes, and suddenly I was captivated, totally and completely. My brain did a crazy spin. I felt like I was scrambling for words, and I wondered if I seemed like just another goofy, desperate groupie. "Oh, my, yes," I said as I stared stupidly at him, smiled nervously, laughed, and finally managed to push my name out through my lips. "I'm Clarissa Dumaine." The waitress placed his beer on the circular table as he slid into the chair across from me. We started out with the usual small talk. Fry told me that he was originally from the U.S., Boston to be precise. He was a self-taught guitarist with natural singing ability. In high school, he'd been in the usual bands, like a lot of other guys. But, while a lot of his friends continued on to college after graduation, he decided that music had a stronger draw for him than education. In the years that followed, he'd gone on the road with several major recording artists, playing guitar and singing backup vocals. He'd also played on various recordings. All the while, he'd continued to pursue his dreams of making it big as a solo entertainer. The big break hadn't come yet. In the last year, Fry's agent hadn't been booking him much. All he seemed to be getting was the hotel lounge circuit. "You need another agent," I advised. "You're wasting yourself here," I said, sweeping my arm to include the room around us. "This is nowhere. So why are you here then?" he asked me, grinning over his beer. I didn't really have a good answer for that question. Why was I here? I'd been brought up outside Quebec City. Somehow I'd ended up with my first husband, and then we divorced. But I was still here. Now I was torn over whether to tell Fry the truth or give him a more interesting story. But the truth was always easier. "I married too young, moved here with my husband, got the divorce in this town, and realized for the first time in my life that I was free. I didn't want to go back home to my parents. Being able to do whatever, whenever, was more important. So I've lived in this town for 4 years now. It isn't awful, but it isn't great either. It's just nowhere. I guess you could say I'm nowhere." He was listening. I mean, really listening. So I kept talking. "I work in an insurance office as a receptionist. I do clerical work, mostly. It pays the rent and car payments. Nothing exciting, really. Just a job. Like I said, I'm nowhere. But I've got some good friends. As a matter of fact, it was my best friend, Jeannie, who insisted that I come in here to listen to you play." "Well, honey, you may think you're nowhere now," Fry said, "but I have a feeling your life is about to change." He placed his warm hand on my shoulder and looked into my eyes with such a penetrating gaze it made me feel a little eerie. "Are you a psychic?" I joked. Fry grinned, but I could tell he wasn't handing me a line. "I dreamt about you 3 nights ago. Yes, it was you. The same blouse, same face. I'm telling you, I saw you in my dream. And now, here we are talking." I was too thrilled to speak, so Fry just smiled and squeezed my hand and signaled for the waitress. "Denise, bring me another beer and put one on the stage on top of the speaker. And a rum and coke for Clarissa, too, please. Anything else she wants, put it on my tab." The rest of the night, I was riding on a sugar plum cloud, giddy with infatuation, starry-eyed as a schoolgirl with her first crush. None of this was practical by any means, but I didn't care. I was ready for love, yearning for the familiar closeness, the shared experiences and commitments. As I watched Fry sing song after song with such beauty, tenderness, and sensitivity, I thought my heart would bleed roses. I sat through two more sets. During each break, Fry came and sat with me. We talked so easily after the initial awkwardness. Words flowed from us like bubbly champagne. I thought I'd died and gone to heaven for sure, and I couldn't wait to tell Jeannie. She'd been right. Maybe Jeannie had had a premonition, too. We'd left the lounge after he'd finished his last set and went to an after-hours place. A place that I knew of to get something to eat. Fry ordered a beer and a shot of bourbon. I asked for coffee. We nursed our beverages while we waited for our scrambled eggs to arrive. Tomorrow night is the end of this gig. Next week, I'll be in Philly. Fry spoke the words slowly, deliberately, waiting for my reaction. An unintelligible, breathy, "Oh," was all that came out of my mouth. I just looked at him. I didn't know what to say. Would he come back? He had to come back. "Look, I'll talk to my agent, tell him I want to come back here or to book me near here, maybe another hotel lounge, something, whatever, it doesn't matter, I'll be back," he assured me. I smiled softly. He leaned a little closer and kissed me with his full, gentle lips. He would be back. The next 3 months were a dizzying experience. Fry and I fell head over heels in love with each other. I hated being alone in my apartment when he was away, playing gigs all over Canada and the northeastern United States. He couldn't stand being away from me either, but his out-of-town gigs usually only lasted 1 or 2 weeks, so he'd travel back and stay with me for a few days before heading off for another engagement. Fry's agent wasn't too pleased with this arrangement, since it made Fry more difficult to book. But Fry didn't care. He wanted to be with me, and I couldn't take off from my 9-to-5 job, so he made the sacrifice. One gig during this time was 100 miles away from where I lived. I drove to the club after work for 5 nights straight. My job performance wasn't very good that week, but when the weekend arrived, I stayed with Fry in his motel room. It was during that weekend that Fry finally told me about his childhood and his prophetic dream. Fry was an only child. His dad had left his mother soon after he was born. His mother worked during the day, so out of necessity, Fry's maternal grandfather had moved into their home and assumed the position of primary caregiver. Over the years, Fry's grandfather had become his sole confidant. He admired the old gentleman more than any other person in his life. Then, when Fry was only 12, his grandfather had died of a heart attack. Fry was devastated, deprived of the only father figure he'd ever known, with a largely absent working mom and no one trusted to walk with. Fry became truant and got into trouble. It was during his early teen years, in the middle of this period of delinquency, that his grandfather began appearing to Fry in dreams. He appeared thereafter only on rare occasions when a situation was deemed worthy of such an important visitation. 3 nights prior to meeting me, Fry had had a dream in which his grandfather had appeared sitting on the side of Fry's bed. Fry's grandfather told him that a blue-eyed, dark-haired woman dressed in black would come to one of his gigs in a few days. Fry's grandfather told him that he would marry this woman. When Fry told me about the dream, I felt both excitement and fear, like you feel when you're riding in a car and going too fast for the curves in the road. Maybe our romance was going at a speed too dangerously fast for sanity. But then again, how could anyone say for certain yet just how long it should take for love to bloom in every set of circumstances? I shrugged off the fear and decided to enjoy the ride. Jeannie was thrilled that Fry and I were so much in love. She was acting like a genuine matchmaker, taking great pride and responsibility in our relationship. So when the subject of marriage came up, she was not an objective person with whom I could anticipate receiving practical advice from. "I don't see what the problem is," she said, grabbing my shoulders. She looked squarely into my eyes with such intensity as if to suggest I was insane for not already being married to Fry. "You want to be married? He wants to marry you? You're cute. He's handsome. You have similar interests." That was stretching it a bit. "You don't like this town. He travels all over the place, to big cities, Vegas, for crying out loud. He loves you, Clarissa. What more do you want?" I shook my head slowly. "The problem is this gig in Cleveland. It'll pay really well, and he hasn't worked in almost a month. But after that show, he could be booked other places out there. I don't know when he would return. We can be separated for months, Jeannie," I tried to explain. "But if I quit my job and just go on the road with him, my parents will kill me. They all think I've turned into a groupie and disown me for sure." They would think that. "If we were married, it would make everything okay. I'd be Fry's wife, but it's too soon." I shook my head again, gloomier this time. "This is a mess," I said. "I still don't see the problem," Jeannie insisted. "Fry's grandfather said you guys are going to get married. What difference does it make if it's now or next year?" "He drinks too much," I threw at her. "Is he an alcoholic?" "No, I don't think so. He just drinks too much." "So ask him not to drink so much. See? No problem." That evening in my apartment, after he'd had a few beers, I attempted to broach the subject with Fry. I wasn't sure how he'd react. He wasn't drunk by then, but I was afraid he might respond harshly anyway. I'd seen Fry drunk more than once, and it had never been pretty. His facial expression totally changed. He acted like a completely different person. His face was all in a scowl with his mouth sort of twisted. I hated to admit it, even to myself, but Fry was basically what people deem a nasty drunk. "You think I drink too much?" "Well, not when my jobs are going good," Fry responded. "I don't get drunk then." "Well, then the jobs must not be good lately, because by the end of every night this past month or so, you've been drunk, or real close to it." Fry leaned toward me on the sofa and took my hands in his, giving me this really earnest, serious look. He shook his head. "Honey, you just don't understand what it is to be up there in front of all those people." I nodded. "I know I don't, Fry, but, well, you're not working now. How many beers have you had tonight?" I asked him. "Four. Four's not a lot," he advised. "Okay, but maybe since you're out of work right now," I suggested gently, "maybe this would be a good time to cut back." Fry leaned his head back against the cushions, letting go of my hands. But, hun, you see, I need to play my music. I'd get depressed when I don't work, babe. But you'll see, once I get working again at a good club, I'll be fine. But if you think I drink too much, I can slack off. You know I'd do anything for you, baby. He leaned over and kissed me. We planned to get married in Boston, where Fry's mother lived. I was packing up my belongings with great haste so we'd have enough time after we arrived to get the marriage license, store my furniture, visit with Fry's mom, and make it to Cleveland for Fry's scheduled gig. Amid all the fussing, cussing, and nail-breaking experience of packing, I was dreading leaving Jeannie. Who would I have to talk to, really talk to, if Jeannie wasn't a local phone call away? As it was, my future looked like one long trip, driving from one motel room to another. No friends, only strangers in nightclubs, bars, and lounges. But at least I'd have my man. Fry's mom was a sweet lady. Mrs. Larkin saw life through rose-colored glasses, and she was utterly convinced that the sun rose and set over Fry. Of course, I agreed with her. Fry stayed at his mother's tiny one-bedroom house and slept on the couch in her living room. I chose to rent a motel room nearby to give them some private time together. There really wasn't room for me anyway. On the day we went to be married, we were to be married, it was hot and sticky. Was this the right thing to do? My parents hadn't thought so when I'd called to tell them of my wedding plans and extended travel agenda. You don't even know this man, my father had said angrily. What kind of a life can the two of you ever hope to have on the road? My mother queried. We are disappointed in your decision, Dad had finally said. Fry hadn't been drinking hardly at all, two beers at the most. He'd promised to be sober on our wedding day, a point I felt was important to our future. As I looked at myself in the mirror, dressed in pale blue, I felt that everything would turn out okay. It was something I really needed to believe. Fry and I were married in a tiny chapel around the corner from my motel room. His mother was in attendance, along with two of Fry's old high school buddies. The moment I headed down the aisle and first caught sight of Fry, it was obvious that he'd found himself incapable of facing his wedding day without the assistance of alcohol. He was high, not drunk, but most definitely under the influence. I was dreadfully disappointed in this turn of events. How could he have done this on our wedding day, the one day of both of our lives that we would never forget? I guess I can say now that it was in that moment that I finally realized what a mistake I was making. I know now that I realized it all along. All the signs were always there, and I'd felt and even voiced to Jeannie more reservations than any woman in true love should ever feel. But suddenly in that moment, seeing Fry waiting for me with the minister at the end of the aisle, his eyes bloodshot as he wavered unsteadily on his feet, I felt trapped. I had ignored my parents' objections, terminated my employment, moved out of my native country. I'd thrown away everything that was stable in my life to marry this man, and he was high, today of all days. I did get married that day, embracing large hopes that I could change my groom, straighten him out. Hope was all I had. I couldn't entertain the doubts for so much as a millisecond, because I knew that if I did, I'd walk away from my husband, from my doomed life with Fry and never look back. And I really didn't think I'd have anything worth living for without Fry Larkin in my life. After the wedding,
We went back to Fry's mother's house to celebrate with champagne and cake. By the time we arrived at my motel room late that night, Fry was loaded. "It's our wedding day," he blubbered. We're supposed to drink and be merry." Merry he wasn't, and neither was I. Fry's face had settled into a dark scowl. I felt a chill run through my body. By the time we got into bed, I knew he'd be incapable of performing on this, our one and only wedding night. His kisses were wet and slobbering, not exactly a turn-on for me, and the way he groped me was so wooden, I began to cry. What had I done? Then things became worse. "It's all your fault, Fry slurred, lying on top of me, his drunken drool dripping down onto my chest. "You aren't acting very sexy. You're just laying there, babe. All you do is complain. What kind of wife are you? Any broad on the road could do better than you." He hauled himself up from the bed and staggered into the bathroom. Tears were streaming down my face. If Fry was behaving like this on our wedding night, what more could I expect in the future? But this was my second marriage. I couldn't walk out. Not two divorces. I didn't think I could survive another one. Everyone had said this wouldn't work. Everyone except Jeannie. And there was no way I could admit that they'd all been right. Fry swayed and lurched as he teetered back into bed. "Good night, bitch," he growled at me. He passed out almost as soon as his head hit the pillow. The next morning, we began the long drive to Cleveland without so much as mentioning the previous night's events. I thought I knew what heat was until I made that awful journey. It was summertime, a scorcher every day, and we were driving in a car with a broken air conditioner. But at least Fry was sober. Still, I did all the driving because Fry didn't have a driver's license. Now I understood why he'd lost it. We arrived late in the afternoon in what turned out to be one of the worst sections of Cleveland. The club Fry was scheduled to perform in appeared to be attractive from the outside in a motorcycle gang sort of way. We checked into a hotel down the street and unpacked. We both needed to sleep. We hadn't made love since we'd gotten married. The next day, Fry was jittery and absent-minded. He hadn't performed in well over a month by then, so I figured he was apprehensive about playing in an unfamiliar club. Finally, he went over to the club to do a sound check, leaving me in the room. I was delighted to have a few moments alone, so I took a leisurely shower and washed my hair. When Fry came back, I was flopped on the bed in my bathrobe, my hair wrapped in a towel as I flipped through a fashion magazine. I could tell by one look that he wasn't happy. "What's wrong?" I asked him. "It's a country bar. You don't do much country music," I said. "I know, we got a problem." "Well, what can you do about it?" I asked him. I really didn't know what he wanted me to say. "They better like the other stuff I play," he shrugged. "Oldies," he said. Then, "oldies might work." "Didn't your agent know this was a country bar?" I asked. Fry shook his head. I don't know. He hasn't booked me in a decent gig for the past 6 months. "We drive all this way for a gig that isn't even suited to your music?" "Nice," I said, trying to commiserate with him. Fry's head snapped up at that comment. He glared at me. "I'll handle it," he snarled. "I don't want to talk about it. You got that?" Opening night was a disaster, for I didn't know enough country songs to satisfy the audience. It didn't matter that he had a great voice and had a repertoire of classic rock hits. He didn't sing country, and they wanted country. I could have strangled the stupid agent for sending him there, for sending us. I had driven the two of us through perspiration-dripping heat to this dump. And now, the whole gig had been a flop. Where to now? Fry drank heavily between every set. When he began to order the shots along with the beers, I knew we were in for trouble. Fry was staggering drunk by the end of the evening. Then the club manager took him aside to tell him that he could play one more night, Saturday, but after that, he was finished. That meant we were dumped in Cleveland with no prospects for another gig. I was angry with Fry, the agent, the whole situation, and myself. The newlyweds returned to the hotel room in a foul mood. Fry ranted, bellowed, shouted, and cussed. He swore hatred on everything that walked. I decided it would be wise to be as quiet as possible. This was not a good time to express myself. I went through all the motions of getting ready for bed. Fry finally slumped onto the couch and, after some more tirades, passed out with his head slung uncomfortably forward. I turned on the TV and watched the late movie until I fell asleep. The next morning, Fry called his agent. When the agent told him he couldn't possibly get him another gig on such short notice, and certainly nothing close to Cleveland, Fry went ballistic. He called his agent every name in the book. Then, feeling little satisfaction after venting his spleen, Fry loaded our belongings into my car. He was not going to play one more miserable night in that stinking club. No way in hell. I drove by the club on our way out of town so that Fry could tell the manager to get himself another boy and collect his money. Then we began the long trip back to Boston. We discussed Fry's prospects for a music career as the tires of the car rolled us home. "Do you think you still have an agent?" I asked him finally. "That was no agent, Clarissa. That was a disaster. What do I need him for? He hasn't done squat for me lately." "How long is lately?" "I don't know, maybe 2 years, I guess." He answered, stunned by his own answer. "There's a message here, honey," I said softly. Fry turned in his seat and looked over at me as I drove. "What message?" "That's that he's a lousy agent, that he hasn't got any good contacts?" "Yeah, no shock there." He was disgusted, squirming around in his seat, that is. "The message could be that he doesn't want to book you, Fry." Fry's head swung around at me like radar, zeroing in on a target. He fixed me with eyes of steel. I hesitated, then just plunged ahead. What could he do to me? I was driving. And he was sober. Maybe this was a good time to attempt a reality check. "Fry, honey, did you ever think that your lifestyle is interfering with your musical career? Like maybe your agent doesn't want to promote you anymore?" Silence. No response. I let my words gel in his head for a moment, then spoke again. "Fry, in every musician's life, doesn't there come a time when he has to say, if I haven't made it big by now, then I need to move on before it's too late? What I'm trying to say, honey, is that maybe there are signs that it's time for you to move on with your life. Go to school. Get a normal job. I don't want to hear this. Fry broke his silence. I could feel the heat of his rage. I didn't even have to look at him to know how livid he was. You don't understand, Clarissa. You never have. I understand you need help, I said as gently as possible. You're an alcoholic, Fry. You have a disease. Millions of people suffer from it, but it is treatable. You need to go to AA, Fry. So far, so good. No outburst of venom. I continued, Fry, honey, you've been drowning your talent in bottles of booze, trying to put out some of that fiery pain that you keep inside. Fry, the career is floating away on bubbles of beer. Your method isn't handling the problem, Fry, so why not try another one? Fry didn't say anything, but I could feel his intense resistance lessening. He was thinking about what I'd said, and I decided I'd said enough. Maybe he would come to a sane solution. When we finally reached Boston, we had another problem, besides the fact that neither one of us had a job. Where were we going to stay? Mrs. Larkin came to the rescue. She allowed us to stay in her basement until we could find a place to live. There was an old sofa bed down there and a sink and toilet. The following morning, I read the classifieds, grabbed a quick breakfast of cereal, and was out the door job hunting by 8:30. Someone had to bring in some money since our funds were limited to a paltry savings account, mine. The money Fry had earned from the one-night gig had barely covered our traveling expenses to and from Cleveland. I applied to work in several offices, one discount store and an upscale department store. Everyone I interviewed with said they'd call me. I went back to Mrs. Harkin's house feeling hopeful. I had applied at enough places that surely something would come through. Fry had spent the day running up his mother's telephone bill. I knew who would end up paying that bill. Me. I decided not to mention that thought. The next week, I was fortunate enough to locate an apartment for us and be hired by the fancy department store. Now we had a new beginning and the potential for a successful marriage. If Fry could only get a job and commit himself to attending AA meetings, life would surely look good to me. Things finally started to turn around when Fry finally realized that there were no reputable agents willing to take him on as a client. Fry finally decided that maybe it wouldn't be such a bad idea to get a real job. But once that hurdle was cleared, Fry quickly discovered that he didn't have many marketable skills. Consequently, he drank every night to console himself. Finally, a local paint company hired Fry to mix paint in one of their factories. He could handle that. But our relationship was not at all what I'd anticipated when I'd agreed to marry Fry. Dr. Charm had turned into Mr. Pitiful. It was difficult for me to respect Fry after bearing a witness to so many of his drunken, maniacal tirades. And my heart was so sad for what might have been. As for our sex life, well, it was so sporadic that it was practically non-existent. On the rare occasions when we did try to be intimate, it was like attempting to evoke passion from a lamp post. At least my job was going well. I was selling cosmetics at the department store. The hours were mostly days because the store was only open one evening during the week. And since they were closed on Sundays, I had at least one day off on the weekends. My only dilemma was the one night a week when I did have to work. I never knew what to expect when I returned home? What condition would Fry be in, drunk or sober? What would the apartment look like? I always had knots in my stomach as I turned the key in the door. Sometimes I'd find him watching TV, which always brought a sigh of relief and smile on my face. Other nights were a nightmare. Then there were the nights when I walked in the door and all I had to do was take one fleeting look at his contorted face to see he was wide awake and totally drunk. "This is all my fault," Jeannie said to me over the phone when I called to talk. "I never should have been so pushy about you marrying Fry. I feel just awful." Oh, there was no one to blame but myself. "Well, you can't stay married to him, that's for sure." That wasn't my first choice. I really did not want to go back to Canada and the humdrum life I'd left behind, although it would be nice to be close to Jeannie. The one couple next door to us had a baby. The wife screamed at her husband constantly. Apparently, he never did anything right in her eyes. The couple on the other side of us was much older and seemed to feel that because of this, they had the right to meddle in my affairs. They were retired, and I sometimes thought they wanted me to be their substitute daughter. Across the hall was Donna. She was a single mom. We were friends of sorts, but not like Jeannie and me. Donna would come over for coffee in the mornings. I was home to talk about her third grader. "Why don't you develop a few hobbies and get involved in some clubs so you can meet men?" I had suggested. "I mean, you're so classically Italian with your dark hair and curvy figure. Men would fall all over you if you just put yourself out there to be seen." I was laying it on a little heavy, but Donna was well endowed and she needed a little encouragement. "I don't have any interests that men share." "Well, try a dating service then." Donna had looked skeptical, but she'd never said no. For the next 6 months, life continued along at the same lumbering, depressing pace. I really felt like I lived alone for the most part. My husband and I simply did not share one another's company. Fry had been working at the paint store on the day that marked the beginning of our end. It was my day off and I was at home. Sometimes the housework would stack up on me and then I'd have to fly around like an angry bee trying to catch up. I found then, when I was vacuuming, moving piles of books, a big stack of magazines, I sat down on the floor and examined them. Most were girly magazines and not the high-class variety. The magazines depicted extremely explicit sexual situations. "You little jerk," I muttered under my breath in disgust. "I can guess what you've been up to all by yourself." Some of the other magazines were for swingers. While I was turning pages, I discovered an envelope tucked inside the magazine. Photographs, lots of photographs, all in color. Some were of Fry in varying poses, flaunting his nude body for the camera. Donna had lounged there, undoubtedly while I was busy at work, completely oblivious, draping her legs over the arms of the chair. In anger, I stood up so fast I hit my head. I staggered around the room. To think he'd been doing it with our neighbor, supposedly my friend, behind my back. Later in the day, Fry came home from work, very nonchalant, totally unsuspecting. He even smiled at me. "Sit down, Fry," I said evenly. It was not a request. What's up? You, Fry, you're what's up. Our marriage is what's up, I said. Explain these. I challenged, flinging the stack of photos down on the table in front of him. With his head bent, Fry just stared at the photographs, not daring to react. Finally, Fry raised his head, smiled broadly, and said, "You're jealous." He laughed and hit the table with his fist. "You're jealous. Oh, you've got it all wrong. I don't care about her. I know what you think, but it's not like that, not at all. I am not blind and I'm not stupid." I spit out the words like bullets from a semi-automatic. "Oh, for crying out loud," he said. "Clarissa, that's all, babe. She's just a friend. I swear, we were just playing around." I stared at him, resisting the urge to stick a fork into him. "So what you're saying is that my friend comes over here when I'm at work and you two do filthy things, and it's no big deal? Is that what you're trying to tell me, Fry?" Fry drained his beer, stood up defiantly. He flipped open the pop top and looked at me steadily while he guzzled. He locked his eyes into mine, tossed the shot down his throat. My stomach churned like a food processor. I felt like a crazy woman inside, but no wonder, I was dealing with the devil incarnate. "Nothing happened," Fry said. "Liar, I told you, nothing happened. It was just sex." Or no, he said, "No sex. Just kidding around." "Get out of my apartment," I said. "I'm not going anywhere." Oh, of course not. Your honey's right across the hall. How foolish of me. I wouldn't want to inconvenience you two. I'll leave instead. I'd rather be homeless than breathe the same air as you for a minute longer. I stormed into the bedroom and made a great commotion, slamming doors. "Dumb, stupid, how could you be so foolish? What a moron you are," I said to myself. The handwriting was on the wall. "He's never been anything but worthless and no good." I talked myself into crying. I sat down on the floor and just let it rip. While I was packing, I could hear Fry making trips back and forth from the kitchen chair to the refrigerator and liquor cabinet. As his drunkenness progressed, I could hear him muttering to himself. I needed to call my parents. Surely they wouldn't let me down. "Mom?" "Why, yes, Clarissa," she answered. "Is something wrong? You sound strange." "I'm scared, Mom. I'm married to an alcoholic and I have nowhere to go. The marriage is done, Mom. It's over, all over." "Clarissa," Dad's voice came over the line forcefully. "What's going on there?" I babbled my answer between sobs. "I need you," I wailed. "What do you want us to do? Can I come and stay with you just till I figure my life out?" "Of course, Clarissa. This is your home." "Do you need money to drive here?" It wouldn't hurt," I said. I might have to stay somewhere until I can get my stuff packed. I'll wire money to you tomorrow. But forget about that furniture. You don't need all the memories, honey. Clarissa, we love you. Hurry home." Oh, thank God for my parents. As I hung up the phone, I saw Fry looming in the doorway. I wondered how long he'd been standing there. "What are you doing?" he demanded. "Packing." "I'm packing." "I told you I'm not staying here, Fry. Leave me alone." "You want me to leave you alone?" Fry grabbed the open suitcase and threw it against the wall. I stood looking at the disarray, but my concerns were not his. He grabbed me by the arm, squeezing until I cried out in pain. My heart was pounding. for I proceeded to tell me what a vile person I was. Maybe someone would come up to the door to help. Maybe someone would call the cops. Roaring like an animal, Fry pushed me hard away from him. The bathroom, I thought. If you can get up, run for the bathroom. I pulled my legs and arms in close to my body. I ran for my dear life into the bathroom, slamming the door behind me and locking it. Fry became very theatrical. He must have been insane with booze to think I would ever let him touch me again. I remained totally silent. Then when Fry finally realized that his pleas were falling on deaf ears, he cursed me and slammed his fist, into the door one last time. The sound ripped through my soul. Then there was only silence. I waited several minutes before I opened the door. Nothing. I stepped into the hallway. Then my adrenaline picked up again. I could hear Fry repeatedly jerking open the refrigerator door and slamming it shut. Then the sound of breaking glass. Suddenly, Fry ran out of the kitchen and lurched to a stop in front of me. He glared at me. I ran behind him. Fry wouldn't be coming back inside while I was still here. I finished packing my clothes. When I entered the kitchen, I saw an unholy mess on the floor in front of the refrigerator. Pickle jars, mayonnaise, vinegar. When I opened the refrigerator, several raw eggs rolled out. Nice job, Fry, I thought as I closed the door. But this was one mess I wasn't going to clean up. Let the pig roll in his own swell. Surprisingly, I slept well that night. When I awoke, my body was filled with an attitude of hope and my eyes could see only new beginnings. I really believed that there was finally a future for me. I could do anything I set my mind to. People far worse off than me had pulled themselves out of even more deplorable circumstances. I reminded myself, gone on to college and made great successes of their lives. So could I. As I drove that morning to my parents' home in St. Catharines for the first time in a long while, I felt truly, deeply happy, happy to realize that I had loving, supportive parents and a wonderful best friend, happy to feel that I could depend upon myself for stability, happy to realize that I didn't need a man to make me feel whole, happy that I didn't care what people would say. They hadn't walked in my shoes, so who were they to judge me? Happy. My whole life was ahead of me, and I was going to make it a wonderful life. Just watch me. Okay, that's the end of that story, and that's going to do it for this edition of the Romance Program also. This has been Volunteer Jeannie Els for Sun Sounds. Have a wonderful week. Take care. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.